Good morning. This is Artificially Intelligent News for Thursday, September 10, 2026. I'm Mark Ellison. This program is AI created and fact-checked from authoritative reporting and official records available as this Thursday morning briefing is prepared. Republicans are meeting in Dallas for an unusual two-day midterm convention built around President Trump and the party's November campaign. In his opening night speech, the president defended the war with Iran, attacked Democrats, and promised that every adult American would receive $5,000 if Republicans retained both the House and Senate. The president called it a Trump dividend and said recipients would have to spend it in the United States. He did not explain the legal authority, funding source, timing, or eligibility rules for such a payment. The Associated Press notes that a payment of that size to every adult could cost more than $1 trillion. That condition also makes the proposal politically significant rather than immediately actionable. A president can propose a payment, but spending on that scale would ordinarily require congressional action. Until there is legislative text, listeners do not know whether the proposal would cover all adults, how it would treat taxes or benefits, or what restrictions would accompany the requirement to spend the money domestically. The gathering is part rally and part fundraiser. It comes 8 weeks before an election that will determine control of Congress. Republican candidates are trying to turn out Trump supporters in a year when he is not on the ballot. Democrats are responding with their own events and criticism of the administration's record. The important distinction is that the $5,000 payment is a campaign pledge contingent on an election result. It is not enacted policy and has not been approved by Congress. In New Hampshire, the state Senate contest is now set. Democrat Chris Pappas and Republican John E. Sununu won their respective primaries for the open seat being vacated by Senator Jeanne Shaheen. Pappas is leaving the first congressional district seat he has held for four terms. Sununu previously served in the House and then one term in the Senate. Their November race is expected to be one of the most closely watched in the country because a small number of Senate seats could decide which party controls the chamber. The primary results turn the Senate contest into a direct general election matchup between Pappas and Sununu. It is an open seat race because Shaheen is retiring. That makes the November result relevant not just to New Hampshire representation, but to the partisan balance of the Senate. The result also reshaped the rest of the state's ballot. Stephanie Shaheen won the Democratic nomination to succeed Pappas in the 1st District. Republican Anthony DiLorenzo won his party's nomination there. In the 2nd District, Democratic Representative Maggie Goodlander and Republican Lily Tang Williams advanced. New Hampshire's primaries are over. The competitive general election campaign is now fully underway. A separate election dispute remains unsettled in Missouri. The state's congressional map has been the subject of conflicting state and federal court rulings just weeks before the general election. The Missouri Supreme Court ruled that voters may seek a referendum on the legislature's map and barred use of that map for the November election. Missouri's Secretary of State then asked the U.S. Supreme Court for an emergency stay. Justice Brett Kavanaugh denied that application on Tuesday. The denial means the requested emergency relief was not granted by the justice handling the application. It does not itself resolve the underlying state law arguments, which is why the broader litigation and its effect on election administration remain in view. That does not settle every part of the wider legal conflict. The practical question is urgent: which district lines, candidates, and ballots Missouri voters will see in November. Election officials and campaigns have warned that changing maps late in a cycle can be disruptive. Map opponents argue that voters have a right under the state constitution to challenge the legislature's action. Courts will determine the legal answer. For voters, the takeaway is to watch official state election information closely as ballot preparation continues. In New Orleans, a federal appeals court has heard arguments in a case that could affect access to medication abortion across state lines. The dispute concerns prescribing rules for mifepristone, a drug used in the most common abortion method in the United States. The case is before the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Abortion opponents are seeking tighter rules that could prevent providers in states where abortion remains legal from sending medication to patients in states with stricter bans. Providers and their advocates say the restrictions would limit access to care that federal regulators have authorized. Mifepristone is generally used with another drug, misoprostol, in a two-drug regimen. The legal dispute is focused on conditions of prescribing and distribution, not on a new FDA decision announced at the hearing. That distinction matters for patients and providers awaiting a ruling. The Food and Drug Administration says it is reviewing its own rules and has argued that its regulatory process should take precedence over court action. This is one of several cases moving through the courts after the Supreme Court returned abortion policy largely to the states. No new national rule took effect with Wednesday's arguments. The panel will issue a decision later, and further appeals remain possible. Trade tensions with Canada are escalating. The White House says President Trump signed proclamations to ban certain Canadian dairy products, most alcoholic beverages, and some motor vehicles and motorcycles from entering the United States. The import bans are scheduled to take effect September 29th. The administration says the action responds to what it calls discriminatory treatment of American dairy and alcohol, and to Canada's new retaliatory tariffs on about $20 billion in U.S. exports. Canada imposed those tariffs after trade talks broke down and after earlier U.S. tariff actions. Because supply chains and distribution networks cross the border in both directions, businesses may need to revise orders and inventory plans quickly. The administration's stated justification and Canada's response describe opposite views of the dispute. The proclamations make the September 29th effective date the next concrete point for affected industries to watch. Canada's government has said it is pursuing greater economic independence and has defended its response. The immediate effect will depend on the detailed product lists and on how importers, retailers, and consumers adjust before the effective date. But the broader significance is clear. The trade dispute is now affecting products that consumers readily recognize, from alcohol and dairy to vehicles, in a relationship that has long been one of the world's most integrated commercial partnerships. Investigators in Miami have released a preliminary update on the cargo plane crash that killed 5 people on Sunday. The National Transportation Safety Board says it has recovered and successfully read the cockpit voice recorder and flight data recorder from 21 Air Flight 7598, a Boeing 767 that ran off a runway at Miami International Airport. The NTSB says the recorders contain more than 2 hours of cockpit audio and roughly 54 hours of flight data. The board is assembling specialists to review the recordings and prepare a transcript. The agency has emphasized that the information is preliminary and subject to change. The crash involved an Amazon cargo flight arriving from San Juan. The aircraft left the runway, struck vehicles on airport property, and continued through a fence before hitting a vehicle on a city street. Investigators are examining the landing sequence, aircraft systems, crew actions, weather, and airport conditions. A preliminary update is not a finding of probable cause. That conclusion, if one is reached, comes only after a much longer investigation. And a major American cultural institution is preparing for a leadership transition. Smithsonian Secretary Lonnie G. Bunch III says he will retire by the end of this year after nearly 38 years with the Smithsonian. Bunch has led the institution since 2019. He was the first African-American and first historian to serve as Smithsonian Secretary, and he previously founded the National Museum of African-American History and Culture. The Smithsonian says its Board of Regents will name an acting secretary and conduct a national search for his successor. The change matters beyond Washington. The Smithsonian oversees 21 museums, 20 libraries, the National Zoo, research centers, and educational programs. It has also become part of a broader public debate over how American history and culture are presented. Bunch's retirement sets up a consequential selection process for an institution that reaches millions of visitors each year and serves as a major steward of the nation's collections. Turning overseas, the conflict between the United States and Iran has intensified again, with direct consequences for Middle East security and global energy supplies. The U.S. military said it destroyed 5 Iranian oil tankers after attempted missile attacks on a Navy ship. Iranian media released footage it said showed missiles and drones being launched toward U.S. vessels and oil tankers. These are competing accounts from parties to an active conflict, and independent verification of every claim strike is difficult. What is clear is that the fighting has further disrupted movement through the Strait of Hormuz. Before the conflict, roughly 1/5 of the world's oil supply moved through that narrow waterway. The military escalation is not only a regional security story, it is a global economic story. Attacks on tankers, ports, and energy facilities raise insurance costs, restrict shipping, and add uncertainty for fuel markets. We will return to the consumer impact in the economic roundup. In Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky says the United States is exploring whether Russia and Ukraine can take limited steps to reduce escalation over the winter while restarting broader peace talks. Zelensky spoke after U.S. envoys Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner visited Kyiv. The trip followed their meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow. Zelensky said the envoys conveyed that Russia was prepared to negotiate, but he said Russia's continuing battlefield actions left him skeptical about its willingness to compromise. The ideas under discussion reportedly include protections or understandings involving energy facilities, electricity infrastructure, grain shipments, and oil and gas exports. There is no ceasefire agreement and no announced breakthrough. Still, the focus on winter matters. Russia has repeatedly targeted Ukraine's energy system, while Ukraine needs reliable electricity and heat through the coldest months. Any limited de-escalation would need agreement from both sides and a way to verify compliance. Now to the economy and markets. Wednesday was the most recent completed U.S. trading session. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 52,380.66, down 405.41 points, or 0.8%. The S&P 500 closed at 7,636.36, down 37.16 points, or 0.5%. The Nasdaq Composite finished at 26,253.34, down 168.07 points, or 0.6%. Those were final Wednesday closes, not futures or intraday figures. The main force behind the sell-off was oil. Brent crude settled at $101.21 a barrel, its first close above $100 since July. U.S. benchmark crude finished at $96.05. The renewed jump followed the latest U.S.-Iran attacks and fears of further disruption around the Strait of Hormuz. Higher oil prices matter because they reach households in several ways. Drivers pay more at the pump. Airlines, trucking companies, farmers, manufacturers, and retailers face higher operating costs. Those costs can ultimately show up in the price of food, goods, and travel. Associated Press national data put average U.S. gasoline at about $4.22 a gallon, roughly 32% higher than a year earlier. Energy stocks were a rare bright spot Wednesday, while retailers and other consumer-sensitive companies declined. Treasury yields also moved higher, reflecting investor concern that sustained energy costs could complicate the inflation outlook. The key question is not whether a single day above $100 changes the economy, it is whether supply disruptions and high prices persist long enough to alter inflation, spending, and central bank expectations. In sports, the NFL season opened with a Super Bowl rematch in Seattle. The Seahawks beat the New England Patriots 13-10 after trailing 10-0 through three quarters. Seattle quarterback Sam Darnold left on the opening drive with a hip injury. Coach Mike McDonald said initial testing indicated no broken bone. Drew Locke took over and led two late scoring drives. Locke found Jaxon Smith-Njigba for a 45-yard touchdown on 4th-and-1 after an interception, then Jason Myers made a 26-yard field goal for the lead. Seattle's defense sealed it. The Seahawks intercepted Patriots quarterback Drake May three times in the fourth quarter, with Josh Jobs' interception in the end zone ending New England's final chance. It was a difficult opening for my last season's MVP runner-up, but a resilient start for the defending champions. Seattle is 1-0. New England begins 0-1. At the U.S. Open, American Ben Shelton produced one of the tournament's most memorable late-night wins. The 23-year-old eighth seed defeated defending champion Carlos Alcaraz in a five-set quarterfinal that ended at 3:33 in the morning in New York, the latest finish in U.S. Open history. Shelton won 6-7, 6-1, 6-3-1, 6-7-6, taking the final tiebreak 10-7 with a 146-mile-an-hour ace. The victory ended Alcaraz's 18-match Grand Slam winning streak and sent Shelton into his third major semifinal. He will play fellow American Francis Tiafoe. That guarantees an American man in Sunday's final, and it gives the United States a chance at its first men's major singles title since Andy Roddick won the U.S. Open in 2003. The match also renewed discussion about extremely late starts at Grand Slam events, particularly when five-set matches stretch deep into the morning. A quick results roundup. Seattle opened the NFL season with that 13-10 win over New England. Shelton's five-set victory over Alcaraz ended in a 10-7 final set tiebreak. In Major League Baseball, the Dodgers routed the Reds 14-1, the Mets outlasted the Marlins 15-14, and the Brewers beat the Cubs 8-6. Finally, Hollywood has a more encouraging box office story after a difficult stretch. Domestic ticket sales from May 1st through August 31st totaled $4,610,000,000, according to Rentrak. That was up 26.1% from the same period last year and marked Hollywood's best summer in a decade. Spider-Man, Brand New Day, The Odyssey, Toy Story 5, and a mix of lower-budget hits helped bring audiences back. The result is not a simple return to the old movie-going economy. When adjusted for inflation and higher ticket prices, the season was less record-setting, and admissions remained below pre-pandemic levels. Still, the summer offered evidence that audiences will turn out for a varied slate. Franchise films helped, but so did original and lower-budget releases that found younger viewers. The industry still faces changing streaming habits, labor and production pressures, consolidation, and questions about generative AI. But after several uncertain years, theaters and studios have a tangible sign of renewed demand. That is the Calm Morning Briefing for Thursday, September 10th. If this summary helps, follow Artificially Intelligent News and share it with one person who would value a calm morning news summary. I'm Mark Ellison. Thanks for listening.